Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I've waited a year and a half to get this show to you today. I am excited to talk to you about your eye. You needed 91 shows, I think. I think you'll agree with me by the end of the show to really understand how I'm going to approach the eye. And as always, I will approach it in a way far deeper than what supplement you take. And don't forget to take your supplements, especially something called Ocuven. It's got all the things you don't get in the soil anymore for the eye, but you know about that and you know where to get it. What you might not understand is how to approach sight, how to approach the health and acuity of your vision as it changes as you age. And really, the physiology behind this is where you can understand how to approach it. Let me explain. We talk about nearsightedness. We talk about cataracts. We talk about macular degeneration. We talk about glaucoma. I'm going to lay out each of those four concerns for you today, from nearsightedness to farsightedness to macular degeneration to glaucoma to the problems that we have with the cataracts, to LASIKs, to glasses, to contact lenses. And I'm going to bring you into the physiology each time. So let's start with what concerns probably most of us at some time during our life, and that is our vision is starting to get shallow. We can't focus on things close to us or far away, nearsightedness or farsightedness. Now, if you've got a connection into the website, if you're on straighttalk.cc, I put pictures to lay out the anatomy and the physiology of the eye today. And those pictures I'm going to use. If you can't get to the computer, but please do if you can. If you can't get to the computer, I'll try to explain as we go along. So let's start with nearsightedness. When light comes through your eye, or when you try to focus, I should say, on an object, focusing on that object means light bounces through the lens of the eye, through the pupil, goes up into the brain through the optic nerve, and bounces back as your image. Now, you have to understand that when that light goes through the lens of the eye, that's that plastic-like material that when you get cataracts, you can't get the light through. But when you have to actually focus on an object, that lens bends. And that bending of the lens allows the light to refract correctly so that you can actually see clearly. Over a period of time, the muscles that pull that lens, and again, if you're on the site, you can see these muscles. They're called the ciliary bodies. These muscles will get too tight or too loose. The tone in those muscles will create a situation where you can't focus clearly on the object. Now, when you wear a pair of glasses, when you put glasses on, or you put contact lenses on, what that prevents you from doing is building those muscles up so that you can focus clearly on the object. This is why, traditionally, in the 7th grade, 8th grade, whenever your sight started to go and you put the glasses on, you ran to the doctor immediately and you had those glasses put on, what you found increasingly over a period of years is that your eyesight would get worse. And the reason is there are muscles in the eye. And when those muscles are not stressed, when they're not exercised, when they're not stretched, and when they're not contracted, the vision then becomes dull. You can't focus anymore. So Glasses are effectively a crutch for nearsightedness. They're the shortcut way out of it. And the person that took advantage of this concept and created a whole new paradigm in it was Dr. Bates. Dr. Bates was an ophthalmologist, and Dr. Bates created the Bates method, whereby when you were nearsighted, you would do a series of exercises. These things are really true. They're not an exaggeration. Nearsightedness is correctable. Farsightedness is correctable. But like everything, you have to do it. And the Bates method was one of the first solutions to this, but you had to understand what the basic concept was behind it. That lens gets stiff. The stiffness in that lens has to do with deposition of nutrient, of bad particles into the lens of the eye, so the lens gets stiff. And of course then, we're branching out from the physical therapy of the eye into understanding that there's a biochemical process, faster in some of us, slower in others. There's a biochemical process that's going to invade the lens of the eye, and it's going to make it less pliable. So whether you're nearsighted or farsighted, in a sense, you're dealing with the same issue. The lens is less flexible. We'll get to the biochemistry of that in a minute, but first you have to understand that the flexibility of the lens is something that you can work with through exercise. Now, today, we have a therapist named Meyer Schneider. You should get on Google and get onto Meyer's website, M-E-I-R-S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R. And Meyer Schneider, great self-help story. He was born nearly blind with cataracts and a few other things and opened a school up in San Francisco, operational today, where he teaches people how to do the same thing that he did himself. And of course, this is a derivation of the Bates method. But what Meyer does is he's a massage therapist and he blends in other modalities because, as always, it's never just one thing. So if you're taking your Ocuvine for the eye, for your nearsightedness, and we'll get into that later, you're starting to address the biochemistry behind sight. But there's also a structural issue behind sight, as we just elaborated. The eye effectively is an evolutionary marvel, but it's also problematic. It's, in a sense, a disaster in the way it's placed in the skull. Now, if you're on the website again, in the eye socket, you can actually see that the eye socket, what the eye fits into, is a confluence. It's an intersection of 12 bones. Now, those 12 bones all have joints between them. So you've got your ethmoid, your lacrimal bone, your maxillary bone, your zygomatic bone, your sphenoid bone, your ethmoid bone. You've got so many bones of the skull that all come together and join to create the eye socket. Those bones have joints between them, sutures, cranial sutures. Again, it's that word we're going to get to in a moment, the cranial rhythm of the head, the cranial rhythm of the skull. And when those bones come together to create the socket of the eye, they have to flex correctly. Now, the back of the eye, right? We start in the front where the light comes in through the lens, through the cornea, through the pupil, and then it goes to the back of the eye where the retina is. And the retina is composed of rods and cones, and it picks up these light signals, sends them to the brain through the optic nerve. That retina on the back of the eye, that's what fits against your eye socket. If that eye socket isn't moving correctly, if that eye socket doesn't have the right frequency or tone, again, I'm using words. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, straighttalk.cc. Get on the website to learn so I can get you more deeply into understanding this, the cranial rhythms of the eye, as evidenced by those 12 bones that compose the eye socket, have to flex and extend. Now, this is occurring on a micro level, so you couldn't see it, but you can feel it. Cranial workers people that are versed in craniosacral therapy will put hands on the eye, and they'll determine whether or not the bones of the skull and therefore the bones of the eye socket are vibrating correctly. That's enormously important because the eye has been designed very problematically. It's an evolutionary marvel, yes, but the eye has been designed very problematically. And I could make analogies to other parts of the body, but the eye is probably the best example to point out what the evolutionary disaster of the eye is. It is very small, but very metabolically active. It's very small, but very metabolically active. Now, the problem with a very small tissue that's very metabolically active is that the arteries that supply it, the capillaries that supply it, better not congest. The arteries that supply it better not congest, because if you have a tissue with very small arteries and a very high metabolic demand, you're going to have enormous congestion. Think about that. You've got a very small intersection, a one-lane intersection in the middle of nowhere, and you pump a massive amount of traffic through it. If there's a problem at that intersection, you're going to have a very high failure rate. No other tissue in the body is so susceptible to this issue, because the eye is singularly, not the, but one of the most metabolically active tissues. It wants what it wants, and it wants it now, and it never stops moving. Right? The heart doesn't stop. The eye doesn't stop. Some organs rest. The eye, not really. So when you have, again, deposition or congestion, deposition, another important key word, when you have the precipitation or depositing, meaning deposition, of all sorts of sediment, we'll get into that, into a metabolically active tissue, you're going to have a massive traffic jam. So when you're looking at inflexibility of the lens, when you're looking at glaucoma, when you're looking at macular degeneration, when you're looking at nearsightedness, these are deposition illnesses. Yes, think about what herb you need to take, from lutein to bilberry to the entire slew of nutrients for the eye. Yes, important. However, you have to understand the vital significance here of keeping everything above your neck in a state of optimal perfusion and optimal drainage. If you can't drain fast enough out of the retina, if you can't drain fast enough out of the lens, if you can't drain fast enough out of the vitreous, if you can't drain fast enough out of the cornea, if every single organelle, every single component of the eye that's excreting its poisons, that's receiving its blood, its oxygen, and excreting sediment, or the buildup of natural sediment in these tissues, if it cannot perfuse in and drain out at a high optimal speed, the eye is extremely vulnerable. You can afford to do it in the lung. You can afford to do it in the heart. You can afford to do it perhaps in the thyroid. You can afford to do it in the intestines. You can't afford to do it in the eye. Simple analogy. Why is ovarian cancer so much higher than testicular cancer? Think about that. It is purely on a structural reason that ovarian cancer is so much higher than testicular cancer. The ovaries are stuffed into the lower abdomen. They are extremely susceptible to displacement and compression. The testicles are in a very different situation. The testicles are external, wagging, getting what? Motion.